This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Darren Moser, sitting in the center chair this week, and I'm joined by my co-host Daniel Prue, sitting at navigation. Daniel, all these planets you've been taking us to, you know, what, like, they seem to often have things in orbit that I just really don't want to go near. Is there a way we can avoid those kind of troublesome planets? I mean, they do have warp capability, but I don't know, can there be a list or something? Like, I need a triple A guide to the stars. Do you have anything like that?
A triple A guide to the stars? Yeah, I mean, I think all of our listeners know, Darren, you're the one that lives in California. I don't know why you're asking me for that.
What are you saying? The Automobile Association of America doesn't exist outside of California?
Well, no. But to the stars, Darren, to the stars.
Okay. I see. I was going to say that the to the stars, that's actually like a 5-cent map printed on the back of a McDonald's placemat.
No, listen.
Where they get those. Yeah.
Look, I get it, right? California is special and great. I have
AAA.
I mean,
it's the most amazing state ever. That's all I'm saying.
I have AAA, Darren. I wasn't talking about AAA. I was talking about to the stars. That's all I was saying.
To the stars! Once we get to Enterprise AAA, that's going to be really far in the future, guys. I mean, they'll have gone through the double A's and the double B. Yeah. But, well, I'm also joined, as you heard, shouting to the stars by Philip Gilfis. And Philip, you know, you've been down in the computer core doing a lot of research for that triple doctorate that you're able to earn in the Federation Times. What are you studying right now? And why do you have every version of the word Feklar written out in, what is that, Comic Sans? No, that's some sort of script. I can't quite tell.
Look, I've been working on my novel, and I told you not to read the pads yet, Darren. It's not ready to be read.
Is it one pad per chapter or one pad per page? I need to know.
Yeah, no. I've gotten out. I've been talking with some interesting people down here in the computer core, though I'm told no one is actually assigned down here. But I think, like, for some reason, the more I go to the colder part of the ships, the more my mind starts to clear up.
You know, I hear that if you look in the mirror and say Feklar 3 times, it appears behind you. But
Well, you know, one thing also, since I've been stuck down here, I've actually been playing around with the consoles. That's why Daniel is at navigation, which of course doesn't exist here on the Enterprise D. But I've decided to make his controls to navigation.
No, that's true. Well, as you may have been able to guess, but I'm guessing not, we're going to be talking about supernatural beings in TNG. And it's kind of hard to actually just keep it to TNG because there's actually a lot more supernaturalness going on out in, I mean, you got the prophets and you have Apollo and other things, you know, in the other Star Trek series. But what I wanted to focus on were not so much their powers or the, you know, different abilities they have, because, I mean, lots of aliens have different abilities, but more how they are like either a worshipped figure or revered figure, or how they impact the society that they're attached to. So I think we're going to jump right in to Philip's favorite and the great Edo god, not the space station that we later see. I mean, this is totally different. But I mean, Philip, in justice, in a world of justice, you know, obviously a lawless world.
Is this a Batman v Superman trailer here?
In a world of justice.
No. I'm glad you started this topic, Darren, because I've got my notes about Castiel and Sam and Dean, and I think this is gonna what you said, supernatural elements, not this isn't the supernatural crossover.
No. No, this is not.
You know how many ships I've created, and I'm not talking about the things you fly in. Oh man. Okay. Well, fine. All right. Well, okay. Fine. We'll talk. But yeah, I think, and I will always say this, and I've always said it, that hashtag justice !! Is one of the best episodes of TNG that combines so many different elements, because it's a story about the Prime Directive. It's a story about Sex Planet. It's a story about religion. It's a story about all those things put together. And so when it comes to the Edo, caretaker, wink,
he's a much better caretaker than some other caretakers we know. just putting it out there.
Because it's a much more, his role with the Edo is much more that caretaker, like, I mean, you know, to just use the word godlike, but a godlike being or god to the, I mean, they call them god, that Edo guardian. Or you know, and that's the debate. You know, I know some people teach on the Enterprise D school that it's called the Edo Guardian, and others teach that it's called God. But we won't get into that. But anyway, but it's much. He's very powerful. Or he, she, it, whatever you want to call it, the Guardian of forever. And I
that
think
is cousin,
it's one of the most more,
the Guardian of forever.
You know, they kind of have the same speech patterns, don't they? Right? They kind of have those echoey voices. Mm-hmm. No, you shall not do this.
Now that will be, that was and will be, and whatever.
And the ship's shaking.
It's kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah, they make stuff shake.
And it's very powerful. And I mean, it's almost, I would say, one of the more powerful things that the Enterprise has ever encountered.
Because they don't beat it.
Because it's not one of the, like, yeah, and it's a total mystery. It's almost like the first ones that, well, for those who watch Babylon 5. So,
stop,
I mean,
with the ships, okay?
You don't know anything.
Sheesh.
And it's sort of like, it's literally half in our world, half in another dimension. And, it, you know, I feel like it's a little tenuous exactly what it does for the Edo, other than just, like, protect them, I guess. You know, it's not like, oh, I send energy like the caretaker, or I, you know, whatever. It's just more like I protect them from anyone. And so when the Enterprise starts with their crazy Wesley sweaters, it's like, hello, none of that for this Eden world. So, but we don't really get a strong, for lack of a better word, religious society in a lot of, I would say, like, on the religious spectrum of worlds we've encountered in Star Trek, not just in Next Generation. I mean, they're on the far side of the scale of a religious world.
Well, that's true. You get the Bajora, you know, which get a whole series pretty much dedicated to their religion. And but that's a good point, Philip, where, yeah, there's, you know, for these just one-off episodes, you'd have to think, like, do the Beta Zeds have, like, a god? Do, you know, it's like, they just don't go into it for a lot of these societies, unless we're, yeah, a god of the mind. but the Justice God is, or the Edo Guardian, sorry, of not forever. You know, yeah, that's a good example. Because, like I said, they don't beat it. It basically, like, Picards it into out of a stalemate, basically. I just verbed Picard, but you know
it. Yeah, it's the Canadian of conclusions. It's just a tie.
They sorried it.
But it's no, I'm kidding. But it's interesting because the Edo, and I'm trying to remember, because they don't, you know, she's like, goes crazy when she actually sees the thing, because she recognizes it, which is weird, because there's no real reason why she should recognize that that's God, but she knows it when she sees it, apparently, much like pornography. And it's just very interesting that how does that work of, you know, how did, you know, like, the prophets send the orbs, like, how do the Edo know about their God?
Yeah, it It's now like in my head, and I kind of had done this before, but maybe not explicitly. But now I'm kind of comparing these super powerful supernatural beings that we get in Trek. So now I'm like, if the Ito met the Ito God, do we get?
I'm now picturing the a Pokemon scenario.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Like on a Game Boy, and it's like Ito God, Ito Guardian uses Shake. It was super effective. You know.
So we've got the Ito Guardian here, and then we've got the Caretaker, and it's like who
Caretaker uses Die, and it doesn't work.
Like. What? Who's to say that the caretaker
caretaker uses banjo?
The Ito Guardian is lulled into a false sense of security and lets down its guard.
Caretaker abducts two of the Ito for testing.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, think about it. We don't know how these we would have to assign some arbitrary power level, and I would guarantee you that these two creatures would have a power level of over 9,000, but
that is a great character sheet.
But if the Ito, no, say the caretaker pulled the Ito Guardian through the array or whatever, I can't remember. You know, into the Delta Quadrant, who would? How would that conversation go? I'm just curious now.
Well, I think on some level they'd understand each other. Both being guardians of a planet, but I think the Ito God would be really upset because he's not at his planet anymore. And yeah, it'd be an interesting conversation. I mean,
wait, it's some sort of like weird, like wife swap episode where like they swap the Ito
and the caretaker. And
the caretaker's now orbiting.
No. And the
Justice planet. And he's like, yeah, I'm just, here's some energy. And they're like, why do we need this?
Yeah, the Ocampo are like, why are we not wearing clothes anymore?
Yeah, the caretaker's like, today enforce death penalty in all sections.
And that's why justice rocks.
Yes, that is why justice rocks. Okay, moving on to the name of this episode, Feklar, otherwise known as Ardra.
Ardra.
I see. I can't remember her name. Is it always capitalized in the text? I can't tell. But in Devil's Due...
Did she not lift one piece of trash off the ground?
But yeah, this is a great... You know, I want to see like a supercut of all the times Picard's in like a court system and just him going from retort to retort to retort, just round and round. Oh, that'd be interesting. But yeah, but in this episode...
Wait, are you pitching some sort of like Star Trek Matlock where it's Jean-Luc?
If I knew the theme to Matlock, I would hum it right now, but unfortunately uniform. That escapes me. Maybe a little Perry Mason or something. Yeah, but yes, that's exactly what I'm pitching. And of course, Data's the judge. And he's also on trial of his sentience at the same time. It's amazing. But... So, yeah, so in this one, it's different because, again, I wanted to focus on not so much the godlike beings, but how they are interacting in their societies. And obviously, this one is not so much the patron as the I've come to collect and you've made a bargain. And it's, you know, like you were just mentioning, Philip, in the very end of the episode, Picard describes how, well, even if this was a bargain, or even if this is something that was made in the past, it wasn't her who did the good works that rebuilt your society. It was you, you know, take credit for it and, you know, cut her out basically. So this, I don't remember the name of the people, but you know, but they seem like a normal kind of industrialized society that just, you know, is working on bettering themselves, kind of getting towards that Federation standpoint.
No. I was going to say, well, of course, Daniel is our expert here, not only because he bizarrely likes this episode, but he did a whole The Ready Room on this.
That's true.
That's right. If anybody is interested, listen to The Ready Room. Insert episode number here. Where we all talk about...
That's not how the Force works, Daniel. I gotta go find the episode, and I gotta put it in here.
We do talk about that. It was over 100, I'll tell you that. There's an episode of The Ready Room over episode 100 where we talk about...
Well, that really narrows it down, Daniel.
It is
The Ready Room 185, Space Mystery, Inc.
Boom.
All right. You heard it from Philip. So 185. But we talk about this. And I feel like this episode and one we'll talk about in a little while, I'm sure, Who Watches the Watchers, kind of lays out the attitude and the philosophy and the viewpoint that TNG has towards these supernatural elements, which is, I will say it diplomatically, as extremely skeptimistic. Skeptimistic. I literally just made up a word. So there you go. I meant to say extremely...
That skeptical and optimistic at the same time.
Yes. Yes, it was. That is extremely skeptically. Picard's entire point in this episode, essentially, is to kind of disprove this following that this false Ardra has amassed, and kind of shows her as a scam artist. And it's a real... I mean, I like the message of the episode. I think it's really well done. And it's a fun, funny episode. And I think it has a lot to say about these kinds of characters, in the TNG kind of style.
Well, I know you know, Daniel, but it's interesting that this is actually, you correct me if I'm wrong, was this a leftover TOS episode or was this a Phase 2 episode?
It was a Phase 2 episode, yeah, that's right.
Because, sort of TOS sort of has its sort of god-killing themes episodes, and so it's sort of interesting.
Some even movies.
This is sort of the, yeah, and this is sort of the devil-killing episode.
So we've killed God and we've killed the devil, so... What's left?
We're like Klingons.
Yeah, that's right.
We killed our gods.
We killed our gods. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. That kind of says all you need to know about a society, pretty much.
It says like, a lot.
Don't mess with these guys. So it was an interesting.
The sort of the interesting thing of. And I don't know, because I know this is something y'all discussed on the Ready Room episode, Daniel, but is it believable that you have this. What appears to be, and we don't know, but what appears to be a very secular society. And then suddenly one of its traditions, myths, religions, whatever you want to call it, appear. And then they're all like, yeah, no, we're going back to that. It's been 2,000 years or however long it was. But
yeah, no, the framework of the actual episode is pretty weak in that respect. But the message is very clear. So it's...
Never trust a woman.
Yeah, so it like...
Who appears out of nowhere.
The way...
And shakes the earth.
The story is laid out in the fact that... my goodness, we pulled... essentially we pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps. Our society was crumbling and collapsing. And but we did all the work to actually do things to make it better. But then we kind of give all of the credit to this creature, to this godlike being... kind of a weird situation. It's kind of hard, but you understand what they're saying, so you kind of give it a pass. At least I do, because I love that episode.
We'll give it a pass, Daniel, on your behalf.
That's good, because I wouldn't want Feklar to visit you there in your bedroom, Darren.
Nah, I think I'm good.
And you know what? We do get a Feklar reference, I believe, later on in Voyager, right? I believe B'Elanna mentions
I
Feklar.
Think, yeah, I think she does.
In Barge
of the Dead.
Yeah.
Now, and this is interesting. What is, because I can't remember. What is Worf's reaction to Feklar?
Oh boy,
Daniel?
You're putting me on the spot. I don't.
I think he kind of gives him a look, kind of like, yeah, I don't know. Even that, like, he doesn't look like, oh my gosh, you're actually Feklar. He kind of still looks like, I could take you.
I always pictured him taller.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I'm pretty sure he just mentions that Feklar is not Stovlakor, which is the Klingon heaven, but the opposite.
Grethel.
Oh, I know. I'm trying to remember. It's in Bard. Yeah, there you go.
Just mentions, basically just gives the backstory of who
oh,
that
that's
is,
right. So. He has to expiate, whatever that word is.
Nice. We're making up the verbs all over the place tonight.
But yeah, let's see. Worf, you know, Worf's a very special person. He meets Feklar and Kalis.
Supernatural words.
I mean,
that's
in his
true.
Lifetime, that's pretty impressive.
Worf has met Klingon
he's
Lucifer.
He's gonna write the Book of Worf
and Klingon and Jesus. All over the place.
Okay. Well, like you mentioned, Daniel, you can't talk about primitive beings or just a planet of the week and encountering a godlike being without talking about who watches the Watchers because of the Picard. And this one has a very specific message of, Star Trek Into Darkness could learn, Enterprise, don't park yourself right next to a pre-warp civilization because they're going to start drawing you in their parchments. But in this one, obviously, they hear Picard and thus believe he's a deity. It's a little interesting. I mean, because they don't actually see him for a while. I don't know. There's a couple of leaps in there, but it's pretty fleshed out.
Are we doing the whole episode, the rest of the episode, about who watches the Watchers?
No, we're not. They have a couple
no,
other
okay.
things on
all
the
right.
list.
I'll try to temper my enthusiasm then.
Minutes, Daniel. No.
Of course.
Yeah, because I believe we would have to negotiate for your services.
For you, Daniel, I give 2 minutes for your gallant debate.
yes, of course. I mean, fans of the show will know there's no shortage of appreciation of Watchers here from me. I will say, and maybe I'm.
Hold on. Is that what you call fans?
Oh,
of
yes,
this episode?
We are the
Watchers.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we are the one watching the Watchers, so we're the Watcherers.
Oh, so you're actually answering the question of the episode.
But I love this episode. I like what it says about the supernatural and the religious, and I think, and maybe I'm biased because of my worldview, but I think that it kind of lays out the Star Trek. I think this is kind of the quintessential Star Trek opinion and view on religions and superstitions and stuff like that. And the fact that it looks at it in a completely scientific, secular-based way, but never, ever passes judgment on it. Picard understands where this woman is coming from, but, you know, he's not deserving of it. This is just, essentially...
You tell that to Picard later when he's wearing Corgano's mask and he's totally passing himself off as a god. I mean, he did not learn that lesson well.
Look, Darren, if someone asks if you're a god,
that's true.
You replicate an appropriate mask and you wear it.
But Who Watches the Watchers is just a fantastic episode and just kind of ultimately how I feel Star Trek kind of addresses this issue.
Well, and besides the religious aspects, it's kind of a heist episode because of the fact that some of their crew is being held hostage and, you know, there's that kind of uncertainty of how are these people going to react because they're now making choices, but not necessarily logical choices, just choices based off of raw faith. And that, you know, can often, as history has proven, lead to, you know, very interesting situation. So, I mean, there's that aspect of the episode. There's, you know, I don't know if we've discussed who played a godlike being better. If this episode took place like with Kirk or with Janeway or with Sisko, like what each of them would do. But I think Picard kind of takes the best answer, you know, that he can. I mean, he's just like, thankfully they weren't musket-wielding society.
Are you asking me how Sisko would react?
Okay.
Are you asking me how Sisko would react if people thought he was a god? Gee, let me try to imagine it really hard, Darren.
He might embrace it. And,
Sisko would move to this planet and build a house on it and live there for
and
the rest of his life.
And a clock and a ship. He would just build all sorts of things. That's true. Okay, except for Sisko. I mean, Kirk or Janeway or Archer. you know, we could figure it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Watchers is similar to the unnamed planet of Devil's Due, where you have a society, I mean, you know, a little bit more earlier in development, but that's, you know, quote-unquote secular and logical. But they have these past traditions of the way back. And then suddenly they're like, it's back again.
And it's so, like Voldemort, you know, he's back. You know, and everything goes sideways.
No, I mean, those are just, that's panic, Darren. Stop trying to alarm. Everything is fine, people. The ministry says everything is fine.
Stop trying to ship across into other lines, Philip. Jeez. This isn't the 602 Club. Now, the next one on my list, it's, you know, we meet him in the pilot, and we've talked a lot. We've done episodes, we've done commentaries, we've talked about Voyager and crossovers. Yeah, you know, we could even do a whole Bridgemates about this guy. It's Q, and, you know, unlike R or T or even S, you know, he's just, you know, he plays himself as a god, but I would almost kind of like to see an episode where Q is doing that to like another planet instead of just Picard. Because you know he does.
You know, I will say I don't think that he plays himself off as a god. I do think he plays himself off as better than humanity, which for all intents and purposes, he is. I mean, right? I mean, I guess, except maybe you could argue the moral, the ethical kind of argument there that no human would do the kinds of silly, torturous things that he does to the people. But really, he doesn't play himself off as a god. He just knows how much more powerful and how much stronger he is than every other being almost that he encounters.
When he does have a lot of power, but there's still things that he doesn't do. Like, he doesn't create life, and he's not omniscient in the fact that he knows everything that's going to happen. He doesn't appear to be omnipresent.
He doesn't create life, Darren? Then where did this puppy
he plucked them from the dimensional void. I don't know. But where did that mariachi band come from, Darren?
That's actually a really good question. We've never really talked about his power limitations.
Welcome to Metatrex.
I don't know that. I do agree that I don't think he's omniscient. He definitely doesn't know everything because he would never.
He acts surprised, or he hides it really well. But I don't think.
No, that's I don't. The case. I don't think he is. I think he could be omniscient, and the fact that like I.
No, you're merely perceiving what he.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's, you know, and again, not to get meta-trekky, but like, you know, in some ways, you know, what is a god? In other words, like Q doesn't have followers, or he doesn't
inspire
anything.
Except we know of.
I mean,
I'm sure there's a planet somewhere he set himself up as a deity. Like,
I feel like there's some reference. Maybe it was in DS9 with the Vash episode or something where she made reference to it or something. But, you know, this is an original. He is more the trickster, the Mr.
He's the low-key of the,
if you will,
Mixel-Pitalik.
Wow, good reference there.
Mixel-Pitalik. Thing is that Q is a race as well. And that's why he can't.
And how do we treat that race, Daniel?
We tell it to go away.
Get off my bridge.
But yeah, no, that's a good point. And it has rules, and it has. You know,
they have a society. They have a home base.
But I think there's like a spectrum of what would be another word for that? What's like a spectrum? It don't come to me. But like, so there's sort of those ordered rules that he even reports to. Because I mean, it's interesting about. I mean, you think about. Like the non-Enterprise people, including Guinan. I mean, she is the Enterprise people, I know. But, you know, she had other experience with Guinan. You have the Cal Moraine.
Count to four.
You know, I'm just thinking about – yeah. how the different people he's encountered, you know, how do they view them? Because we just, you know, the Enterprise just uses them as an annoyance.
Right.
Though, I don't know, in Hyde and Q, I'll have to watch that again one of these days. That was, there was a little more awe there. Even, I mean, that was sort of just the second time, though.
I mean, how did, you know, Prince John view him? I mean, that's really important.
Well, and it's interesting, too, right? Taking a little bit of a more broader approach to the subject, you're not going to be awed. You're not going to be wowed. You're not going to feel the need to worship something like these amazing things that were that they've been encountering when this happens twice a year to you, when this happens, you know, every other month. If you come across a species that
you're saying Q appears on the equinox?
Well, that's what I'm
not the ship.
No. He was never on the USS Equinox.
You know, taking it like from the Enterprise, like the Enterprise's perspective, they encountered Q on their first adventure. I mean, really, at that point, any other kind of godlike beings or religious figures, at best, they might seem comparable.
So are you saying that they compare all of their other supernatural beings in some sort of Q continuum of where they are on the Q continuum scale?
Is it the alphabet scale?
I don't think that there is...
Like there's a class in planet. It's like, this is a class Q god.
Between A and Q, where does it rank?
I don't feel like Star Trek presents a supernatural perspective to anything.
Right.
I feel like there is... ultimately, a rational, secular, scientific basis for everything that happens in that universe. And if we don't understand it, we don't understand it. But we don't say that, like, we don't get how Q can do the things he does. But he does them. And we recognize that as reality, but we don't give him special privilege for doing those things. We just say that, whatever, maybe he's further evolved, or he can... you know, he's just
reached, or has better technology
or whatever. It's never like, it's always just a like Philip keeps mentioning, it's a continuum and it's a spectrum, and
they don't revere him.
Exactly. Nobody gets special treatment because of their power level, like I said, which is obviously over 9,000.
Well, I mean, and it reminds me of, you know, as I'm doing my DS9 rewatch, a lot of, and I'm trying not to be critical, but like a lot of the times with the prophets and even the power race, there's magic, in my opinion, that like the only way to explain it is just like, I don't know, it's prophet magic. You know, I don't know why this makes sense.
Lazy
the
writing,
magic.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, no, it's purposeful that this is, you know, and they don't call it magic. I mean, you want to call it what you will, you know, whatever. But prophets just have this thing of they can have these powers. But like Daniel says... and I'm sure there's probably going to be some examples that people will think of, but in TNG, it's never magic. It's always like, oh no, we found out there's an energy converter in the, you know, or there's a transmogrifier, or, you know, whereas, I mean, Deep Space Nine is just like, no, it's, and again, I'm, you know, that's fine. You know, it's just
true.
Sort of like,
DS9 doesn't try to explain the prophets. I mean, even though they call them wormhole aliens, but that's as much as,
I've heard this argument before, and I have to disagree with it. I mean, we were literally just talking about the Edo Guardian and the Caretaker. I kind of lump the wormhole aliens / prophets in that same category as these pretty powerful beings that kind of only care about one planet, seemingly, for whatever reason. And they are given kind of special powers, but that's okay. They aren't given these supreme powers, and they can't do all, they can't control everything. They can't change the fate of whatever. Like, I understand
the
Deep Space Nine is kind of
immaculate conception.
What about the,
I mean, like everything that happens on Deep Space Nine happens in that system. And it is, I mean, like, imagine if all of TNG...
So it's localized magic.
It is. I mean, it is essentially magic, but...
except for a side trip to Earth.
But, like, okay.
Season 7, wink.
Well, here we are. We're talking about all these different characters in TNG. And how many different godlike beings have we encountered in TNG more powerful than the prophets in Deep Space Nine? Well, obviously Q is way more powerful than the prophets ever were. Kevin is way more powerful than the prophets. I mean, we could probably list five characters in TNG more powerful.
I can count five godlike beings I've met before you, Prophet. Just boom, boom, boom.
But how many
boom,
of them
boom.
Have glowy eyes and inhabit people and have spiritual fights on the promenade and then have fire caves? And
fire caves on one planet, by the way. So yeah. I guess my point is just while Deep Space Nine definitely does the most to explore spirituality and religion, which is fine, I'm just saying that when you look at it from a certain perspective, it actually can be completely viewed through a secular lens, and it is presented in a way that all of the other characters, all of the other, like, for example, O'Brien looks at all of this in that one episode where they go back in time on that planet in the Delta Quadrant. And he's like, these aren't my, what was it?
The one episode they go back in time?
Oh, you don't know. Yeah.
you mean Trials and Tribulations?
No.
Okay. You mean Children of Time.
That's not it. Is it Children of Time?
I'm naming all the time travel ones until you tell me which one you're talking about.
It might be Children of Time. But yeah, he's like, and other time. Oh, and I think Worf at some point, like, these aren't my gods.
Oh, Time's Orphan.
Not Time's Orphan, no. And so you can always view that experience through other characters' lenses. And it's like, no, this isn't surprising that this is happening. And Q even isn't like, Janeway has read files about Q. And so it's not such a crazy thing that this exists in this universe. That's all I'm saying.
No, is that the Q files?
Yes. The truth is in the continuum. I don't know.
Said, I think, not to pull out the wormhole aliens again, but the prophets are always very, for lack of a better word, mysterious, or at least nonsensical. Whereas you have Q, who's just so present. Like, he's not like the Edo Guardian. He's not shrouded. He's not like Kevin, who probably looks different than what he appears, which I guess that's cute too as well. But anyway, Q is just like, I'm here. I'm just chilling. I'm, eating Sundays and getting stabbed with forks. There's nothing mysterious. I mean, there is, but he doesn't present himself as mysterious. He's sort of like, I'm here wearing your uniform. Let's talk for 45 minutes.
Pretty much. Well, if you're talking about mysterious godlike beings, I think Nagilum is definitely up there as he places the Enterprise in a maze. Now, there's not nearly as much talk about him as, he's only in one episode. But again, with his powers.
Or is he? Did the Enterprise ever leave?
The experiment never ended, Jean-Luc. I have been helping you travel through time. Nah, it's not quite. But I mean, he obviously, we talked earlier about, do some of these creatures have just powers, or are they manipulating things, or do they have technology? But a lot of things that Nagilum does, from, making the Enterprise be stuck in a position, like it can't escape, to our favorite, face clutching ensign in the con, gets fried mentally or somehow dies, it doesn't look very pleasant, but it's like, I'm sure their shields were up. I'm sure they had measures in place, yet nothing stopped whatever that was, a technology, a wave, something from another dimension. But, he definitely had abilities that maybe not as powerful as a Q on our A to Q scale, but he definitely could do things, that we can't explain. Our writers can, but we can't.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I look at that kind of a being, and again, he doesn't present himself as a god. He's just a different, powerful life form. He's big. He's literally bigger. We don't know what he really looks like, because he actually says he's presenting himself based on how humans look, and it just does a terrible job. He's the Odo of gods.
That's an insult to changelings everywhere.
That's changelingist. But anyway, you know, and so we don't really know what he looks like or what he appears or what's his nature. But he's just like, on the scale of beings, he's just, you know, five race levels up. You know, just like how elves and gnomes are four levels down. It's just the circle of life.
I really do like, Darren, the A to Q scale. I think that's really funny. And that makes a lot of sense because, you know, A, you have ants, and Q, you have Q. And then we can fit everybody else somewhere in between.
Well, K is for Kevin.
K is for Kevin.
If we're doing our God reader.
There you go. Let's see. But E like, is for Edo God.
Yeah. There you go. Because, you know, as I think about this, because, you know, he at least, you know, it, whatever, presents himself as like, oh, I'm a scientist. I'm like you. I'm an explorer. And I talk funny. But so he doesn't present himself as like the Edo Guardian does or like Q does or anything like that. But like as I think about supernatural elements.
Stop trying to make this crossover happen.
I'm just saying if you have an angel anyway. Like for instance, where no one has gone before, where you have the mind and propulsion and dimensions. I mean, we could say, oh, well, there's a scientific explanation. But I mean, and I don't know, you know, I think you get into the quantum physics, this is sort of not my bag, but like that starts to get to the outside realm of, I can explain this. We all think happy thoughts and we'll all get returned home. It's like, well, that's scientific, you know, but I mean, so I feel like that's almost supernatural in that there's no being other than the traveler. But I mean, he's sort of focusing. He's not necessarily
the lens,
source.
Which doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but.
No, that's true. The traveler is someone interesting that we didn't really talk about, but
and that little engineer guy is his familiar, right?
Well, I had one or two honorable mentions. Obviously, we have Kevin the Great and Powerful, and while he's definitely up there on the A to Q scale because, you know, with a thought, he erased an entire species from. Now, I don't know if it was from existence, like, at that moment, or as if they never existed. But I'm kind of thinking it was more of at that moment, because otherwise, like, the destruction would never have happened to his planet, and you start to get a Doc Brown paradox going. And
No. I'm pretty sure it's from existence, because that scene, he explains who this, if I remember correctly, and forgive me, listeners, if I don't, but he explains who this race is. And who they were, and he says they did this terrible thing, and then I poofed them. I poofed them from everything.
The writing in this season is just so amazing.
All about good tea and Chewbacca traps. and I'm trying to remember. Does he say anything about, like, I know he says about his, like, oh, I'm a whatever. I think he says what he is. But anyway.
Daoud.
Yeah. Right. Which, the accent's off. But anyway, yeah. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, like.
Sorry.
No. Like, how many are there? And, you know, what is the status of that? Like, because he says, like, and I don't, again, like, it's been a long time, but I'm a Daoud, or, like, I'm part of the Daoud, or, like, what is the nature of
this? Is there a Daoud cloud that he downloads from?
The Daoud cloud.
Like, what's where would they exist on
you
this,
continue
on this
over
spectrum?
In the Daoud cloud. It totally makes sense.
Wait, is this, like, Android versus Apple?
I think we all know which one's better between those two. The Daoud cloud is the best name.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me, right, is the fact that we've come across this being in this episode that has done literally one of the most egregious crimes that we can think of. And we have no way of dealing with it. We have literally, there's literally no way to even conceptually to even handle the situation. So they're like, we'll let you on this planet and leave you and never come
please
back.
Please don't do that again.
Just don't do it again. Yeah. You know, like this being is so powerful that we have no way of restraining him anyways. He could erase humanity in an instant if he wanted to. And we just leave him there. And it's a
that's
and
even
I get,
what Picard says. Doesn't he say something like, "We have no law against your crime"?
Yes,
like,
yeah.
We would never thought to put that down in our rules. You know, don't erase an entire species from existence.
Make it stop.
It's an interesting episode from that.
How long have you had that in your pocket, Philip? Just waiting for us to talk about Kevin. Sheesh. Sorry, go ahead, Daniel.
It's just an interesting episode to talk about from that perspective because, like, say Q did some terrible thing and blew up a whole star system.
Hey, I wasn't the one who misplaced the entire Deltivid asteroid belt.
You know, how what do we do? We can't do anything. Like, for all our posturing and claims and all of these things that we go on and we do what we can, but we have no effect on those kinds of things.
Yeah, Philip, I think at first I thought you had an ice cream truck in that room, which I was really confused by. But
well, you would have heard me scream. because I think that's, I mean, you already said it, but like that's sort of an interesting challenge for Picard because it almost reminds me of something like it. And this is like a very loose comparison, but it reminds me of the first Vidian encounter in Voyager, where like you know when after Janeway learns that Neelix's lungs are in that guy, she's like, you know, you have my compassion, you know, because like she's like, what can I do with these people? I can't take the lung from him because that's against my value. You know, what do I do? And it's sort of, I feel like that's Picard at the end of this episode of the survivors. He's like, you know, I can't punish him. You know what?
He's
other
punishing
than letting
himself,
him go.
Fortunately,
yeah. So like, it's sort of like I just have to let you go, and you know, that's it.
Well, I was going to mention the Ferengi from The Choice, but I think we'll go past that from our honorable mention as people who set themselves as powerful beings on a planet. Because as we see in a later Voyager episode, they do just that. But or is it The Price? Sorry, not The Choice. The Price.
Yes.
The
yeah,
Price.
I was wondering, like,
yes.
What?
Yes.
I feel like I know pretty much all of them.
I just made up a new title called The Choice. Well, playing Feklar's advocate, Feklar, is not the only thing we've been doing here on Trek FM this week. Here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
You've heard Chief Tripp sign on. I'm serious, Ken. Actually, out of the chair, please.
Okay. God.
I guess the Commodore has the con!
Earl Grey.
Did you really write down Groppler Zorn on this list?
I was just kidding.
This is before he achieved Groppler rank.
He was only a Soplar. He wasn't a Groppler lad.
What fruit did he like before he got to apples?
The orb.
I want to hear Worf give a command sometime like 1/4 ramming speed. And then yes. Someone says, Captain, regulation specifically states that we cannot go at 1/4 ramming speed while we are in orbit of a planet.
The Ready Room.
To what extent is this episode, the writers and producers of Deep Space Nine turning the mirror back at the fans? You know, I mean, I think all of us Star Trek fans at one point or another probably retreat into this universe we love, Star Trek, that is, it's a fictional world.
What are you talking about, Zachary? Are you suggesting that, like, fans might decide to buy microphones and, like, talk about it like it's real for hours on end?
To the journey!
Next one in line is Spirit Folk, and we already agreed that that is just not necessary for anybody, and let's not torture them with it. Good, let's move on.
The characters in the Fairhaven Hollow program begin to suspect the Voyager crew after they witness several supernatural occurrences. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Tokyo Drift really is the perfect subtitle. Like, you could literally put Tokyo Drift onto the end of any movie, and it would instantaneously become a movie that you would have to see. Citizen Kane, Tokyo Drift.
The 602 Club.
I hate it when shows that are grounded in reality, but obviously they're not, and they have their characters go through socially important experiences.
Literary treks.
It is very much every one of the characters, you know, who finds themselves sort of pulled into the conflict that's at the heart of this story. They are reacting to a fear of the other.
Meta treks.
I'd love to answer your question, but I can't get the visual image out of my mind of B. Arthur and Betty White in Starfleet miniskirts and go-go boots.
I can totally picture the Golden Girls as Klingons.
Melodic treks.
What I decided to do was not only would I pick a 6 degree of separation, not only would I do it musically, but I was only going to do movies that were composed by people who had composed for Star Trek.
Saturday Morning Trek.
Dorothy had a little bit of a fit with the animators. They had said over and over again, there is no moon in the Vulcan sky.
I think it was like the first episode that aired of the original series when they mentioned this, because Uhura walks up to Spock and she's like, tell me I'm beautiful. Tell me that I would look good in your moon. And he's like, Vulcan has no moon.
I'm not surprised.
That is an uncanny Uhura.
Continuing mission.
Yeah, and of course, another great thing is when it's all finished and you look at it and go, yeah, we made that together. Yeah, that's one of the greatest moments. And people respond to it and say, oh, that's pretty well made. The effects are great. The actors are great, even though they're Dutch trying to speak English, right?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows to get in on the daily Trek talk. You'll find them in iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune. Visit the Trek.fm website for the full Trek experience. You can view our podcast directory to stream the audio from all of our shows. If you would like to contact us, just go to Trek.fm/contact. From there, choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select Earl Grey. These messages will be relayed by Starfleet to the three of us. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook.com/TrekFM or join our Facebook listener discussion group called The Babel Conference. Find it by searching The Babel Conference on Facebook. Now let's take a moment to talk about our sponsor this week, Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. This is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Now, as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. There's one more way you can directly help us to keep Earl Grey coming to you each and every week, and that's through becoming a patron of Trek FM. By visiting patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose among various pledge levels and receive rewards for becoming a Trek FM patron. These rewards let you inside the observation lounge of our network and make it possible for us to distribute all our great content. So please become a patron and visit patreon.com/trekfm today.
So, Philip, if someone wanted to talk to you about how you pray to the Edo God three times a day, facing your DVD collection, where would they find you?
Well, they can find me on the Twitters. My username is NC Public Servant. That's NC for non-corporeal God being who makes it a sexy planet.
Nice.
And Daniel, if someone wanted to talk to you about your court case pretending to be the head of the 1UP universe, where would they find you?
Well, they would find me where I am the head of the 1UP universe on Twitter at 1UP Dan. That's the
number
one.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's exactly right.
Pick up one discarded game, Daniel?
And that is the number one, not the word.
Well, and if someone wanted to talk to me about, as I'm actually putting together that A to Q scale, I got A, E, F, K, and N, and P, and Q. So I got a couple more to flesh out. They can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi. That's D-R-S-C-I-F-I. Well, yeah, I feel we need to all rewatch, which is it? We need to rewatch Devil's Due, because unlike Daniel, who actually did a great episode on this on the Ready Room, I think we need to brush up on our godlike being law, just in case.
Now, you know, it was prophesied that Earl Grey would last for hundreds of episodes with posterity, but unfortunately, we will have to await the coming of Ardra.
It's so good. Watch the episode, guys. It's so good.
Well, no, I've seen the episode.
No, but... watch it again. It's so good.
Yes, it'll bring a tear to your eye.
Yes, yes. All right, guys. Well, time to pop in that Blu-ray. I'm just kidding. I'm watching on Netflix, obviously. Until then, live long and prosper.
Make it so.
Endgame.
Fire.